Sorry to interrupt. It's Misha here, the Conversation's managing editor. As you probably know, The Conversation relies on you, our readers, to help fund our work. Over the next 2 weeks, we desperately need your help to keep doing our work and to keep this podcast on air. It doesn't take much. For $30 a month, you can help us provide clean, evidence-based information. If you value what we do, please give now by visiting donate.theconversation.edu.au or by clicking on the banner ad on our homepage. And now, back to the podcast.
From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
The government's National COVID-19 Coordination Commission, headed by business figure Nev Power, was set up in March. It's working on two fronts. It's looking at mitigating some of the current effects of the virus, and it is examining ideas for the post-virus future. The Commission is not short of expertise. Its membership includes former Labor Minister and Union Leader Greg Combey, Energy Australia's Managing Director Catherine Tanner, former Telstra CEO David Thodey, and Jane Holton, who in a long public service career headed the Federal Health Department and the Finance Department. The body has a direct line to Scott Morrison, with a virtual meeting with the Prime Minister every fortnight. On Tuesday, the National Cabinet heard a presentation of the Commission's work on COVID-safe workplaces. Nev Power, who used to head Twiggy Forrest's Fortescue Metals Group, joins us today to talk about the Commission's activities. Nev Power, can we start with the Commission's current priorities? What are the main areas it's dealing with for the immediate future?
Well, Michelle, the Commission was set up with two key tasks in mind. The first was to mitigate and minimise the impacts of the coronavirus. And this was by working with businesses and connecting business to government, to find any issues that have been created by the restrictions around the coronavirus and help provide a business perspective in resolving those. The second is about recovering from the virus as quickly as we possibly can. And this is about getting people back to work is the primary focus there, restarting business activity and accelerating that activity where we can within the constraints of the health advice and the restrictions, of course, that are there, but trying to make sure that we maximise the value from a business and jobs perspective.
The National Cabinet today got this presentation on the COVID-safe workplace. How different will workplaces become?
There's no question that we're going to see a business world that is anything but business as usual as we recover from the impacts of the virus. And it's going to vary dramatically business by business. For some businesses, there won't be a huge change and it will be relatively straightforward to adapt their workplaces and their work sites to cope with whatever restrictions are there, social distancing, personal hygiene, etc. For other businesses, it's very challenging, and particularly those businesses that rely on large social gatherings. So each business, and this is where we've been strongly encouraging them to review and reconfigure, needs to look at their own circumstance and say, how can we make sure that our business is set up and ready to deal with this? And that comes, Michelle, I guess, in a number of different issues. First is reconfiguring work sites so that they're COVID safe, so that people are distanced on there. They're either staggered start times, rotating rosters, distancing, personal hygiene facilities put in, PPE. The second is about responding if there is an infection in a workplace, that the protocols and procedures are in place to deal with it, that they then have a procedure to clean the workplace and to make sure it's safe following that, and finally to make sure they've communicated that well with their employees, with their employees' families, with customers, so that everyone knows what to expect and how it's going to be managed in the event that there are any issues.
But for some businesses, for example, let's take a restaurant, surely this could be quite economically devastating because you might not be able to get more than, say, half the old number of people in for a dinner.
It's going to be quite challenging for businesses that have social gatherings as a core of their business. And in the example that you use in a restaurant, each business will need to assess what level of patronage they need to be able to cover their fixed costs and to continue to operate successfully as a business. But there might be opportunities, for example, to have different seating times to spread that out so that they can get the same number of patrons in there over a longer period of time. There might be ways that they can look at reducing their costs to adjust for the impacts of the virus. So every business is going to be different. Every restaurant, as the example you've used, whether they have fixed seating arrangements or whether they have movable tables and chairs, whether they have inside or outside, will need to look at their personal circumstances and say, how can we reconfigure the business to the best we can? Of course, in the interim period, as there are restrictions, the JobKeeper is designed to help them keep their business ready to start, keep a connection with their employees so that they are able to restart as quickly as possible.
Now, I think you've prepared a lot of material for businesses. Where do people access that?
There is a lot of resource that's been pulled together, and SafeWork Australia has done a tremendous amount of work in developing a very comprehensive resource website with links also into each of the SafeWork agencies in the states, because there are some differences and we're looking to get as much consistency and clarity as we can nationally, but there will be differences from state to state, and they are able to go to that website and draw down resources to look at how to configure websites, how to clean websites, all of the processes around safe practice in the workplace. In addition to that, we will have a toolkit that is being established by the NCCC, which will provide a broader set of guidelines of how to access the various JobKeeper and JobSeeker, what to expect in terms of their finances and how to help manage that. And, of course, the links back to SafeWork Australia to make sure that they have the appropriate resources to manage the safety aspects.
Now, let's move to the economy more widely. How quickly do you think that the Australian economy can pick up, and how abnormal will the new normal be in a broad sense?
It's going to vary quite significantly by different sectors. I believe there are some sectors that will be impacted for some time. Anything that is related to international travel is probably going to be challenging for some time. So international tourism, education, services, those things are likely to lag behind other sectors of the economy. Some sectors will be able to accelerate quite quickly. And one of the opportunities here for us is to look at which sectors can get back to normal and grow beyond normal as quickly as possible, and to accelerate and facilitate that growth so that the overall economy is stronger and can grow quickly.
Can you give us a couple of examples there?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the one parts of the economy that will take a little while to recover are those with international travel as a prerequisite. Other parts of the economy, for example, our agriculture sector, our construction sector, there are opportunities in manufacturing, our mining sector, our local tourism and regional tourism can start back as soon as we start seeing release of the restrictions, and there are opportunities for tourism operators and hospitality businesses to produce products that appeals more to local and Australian tourists rather than the international ones.
And maybe a few from New Zealand before too long.
Yes, maybe a few from New Zealand. So I think there is a real opportunity. We have a low Australian dollar. Australians will want to holiday at home for a while, and because there will be parts of the world that are still going through the impact of the coronavirus well after we've seen it off here. So therefore, there's an opportunity for us to refocus on Australian tourism and to make sure that we've got product that is appealing to locals and to Australians.
As you talk around the business community, do you get the feeling that business is recovery ready, or have many companies just taken a permanent knock and are going to really struggle to get back on their feet, or maybe not able to get back on their feet?
I've seen a lot of companies that have worked very hard to be ready. Some have adapted and are continuing to operate, and I think that's been very impressive. And there are others that are still coming up the learning curve, but they're coming very quickly. And as soon as we have some clarity around timeframes, I think that will help businesses dramatically. For example, a lot of hospitality businesses to restart need to start restocking their supply chain, because it's not just food service in the restaurant, it's the food preparation going all the way back to the farms that needs to re-establish that supply chain. So there's a little bit of time that's required, but as soon as businesses have some clarity on timeframes and how their business will look with the change in restrictions, I believe that they will respond very quickly to that. There are some businesses that I think will be looking to, in the longer term, will be looking for some significant change. And our housing construction industry is one of those where we're seeing the pipeline of demand that's coming through for that sector could be challenged for some time. So I think there's an opportunity to look at how we can accelerate approvals through that process, but also how we can provide confidence for people to go ahead and buy their houses and keep that going, and perhaps pull forward the demand for houses that was going to happen over the next 2 or 3 years and try and accelerate that.
On another aspect of this question of supply chains, do you think that Australia's supply chain is too vulnerable, and do we need to be more self-sufficient in some areas?
I think that's a question that's on everyone's mind coming through this, that just how reliant and how intertangled and intertwined the global supply chains are. So there are opportunities for us in this with a low Australian dollar, with a very low cost of capital, and with disrupted supply chains, we've got the opportunity to relook at what we can do in Australia. And for those businesses to be competitive and have the opportunity to get up and ramp up to speed and be globally competitive by the time those global supply chains are fully re-established. I'd say, Michelle, this is not about subsidising inefficient or uncompetitive businesses. This is about using the opportunity for the private sector to be globally competitive.
Now, your old boss, Twiggy Forrest, has been very anxious to counter the suspicion of China that's been exacerbated by the virus. Do you feel the Australian economy has become too dependent on China?
Well, our trading relationship with China is very important, and a lot of our raw materials and commodity exports go to China. And, of course, we rely heavily on China for a lot of manufactured products and for a lot of tourism and international education. So there has been a natural fit between Australia and China because of the proximity of the two countries. And, of course, they're a very large market for us, very close to our country. So I think it's natural that we've seen that. There's also been, in recent times, much more diversification as other countries around Asia and India start to develop their economies as well. So I think there's a natural progression that we'll see, and a natural diversification of markets. Going forward for the foreseeable future, I believe China will remain a very important trading partner.
Now, we're seeing calls to review Australia's immigration program, including the temporary worker part of that. Just two questions here. Firstly, what will the huge drop in immigration due to the border closure mean for the economy? And what sort of work is your commission doing on this?
I think the biggest impact we're going to see will be the housing starts, and that the migrant intake has been a driver of housing starts in Australia, and that won't be replaced in the short term by growth internally. So that's probably the most significant I see in the short term, and that will recover, obviously, as migration recovers in line with that. The key thing about workers, I think, is that there's an opportunity for us to look at what skills are required in the economy as it stands right now and as we come out of the virus restrictions, and to make sure that we've got processes in place to reskill and relocate people into those jobs.
Do you think we should take the opportunity, though, for a wider overhaul of immigration in the longer term, given that a lot of Australians are going to be out of work for a long time because unemployment tends to stay high after a crisis?
I think there'll be a natural transition and a natural process involved with that. But as I say, we'll be looking to identify where the jobs are and what skills are required and retrain people into those jobs. So I think then we can have a look at the gaps that emerge on the other side and what the residual issues are, and review it again then. I'm very confident that we can provide the right sort of training and reskilling to put workers into those jobs quickly.
There are multiple calls to reform the tax system. Do you think this is timely?
That's a question, I guess, for Treasury to contemplate in terms of the big economic levers that they have. What I would say about tax is that I'm very strongly in favour of tax benefits to companies that invest here in Australia and that make that investment, creating business activity and creating jobs in Australia. So if there are opportunities to incentivize companies to do that and to accelerate that process, I think that would be very positive.
So what would that sort of change look like?
This would be some form of investment allowance or investment tax concessions that reward companies for investing directly here in Australia rather than across the board tax reductions for those companies.
In all the talk about reform, there is a bit of a feel of same old about it. For example, there's a lot of talk about the need to slash red tape, and yet governments have been talking about this for many years and in some cases doing it. Do you think that as we go into the changes after the crisis, there will be some reform fatigue by business, indeed later by governments, as changes are looked at?
I think businesses would applaud the opportunity for governments to review the amount of red tape and approval processes, and particularly the time for approvals. There is an opportunity to accelerate our economic growth by removing and reducing a lot of that process. And I'm not talking about cutting corners here, but rather just making it more simpler and easier to get those approvals in place and to have those reviews and to get decisions.
Haven't we seen some of this done already and other measures too, and yet productivity growth has remained quite low?
Well, I think that you can never be complete on this. There's always an opportunity to do things better, and I think that government processes are no different to business processes. We should be looking at how do we achieve the outcomes we want in the most efficient and timely manner.
But we are looking at reform as an accelerator of growth out of this crisis, aren't we? And yet, is it really going to act very quickly? Are people going to put their back in, and businesses their back into reforms?
Well, this is one of the opportunities that is presented by the National Cabinet, because I believe a lot of the duplication issues that we've had on reform agendas previously has probably been very difficult to coordinate between federal and state and between states. So there's an opportunity, while the National Cabinet is operating so effectively, to identify those areas where there is duplication or confusion and conflict between state regulations that can be ironed out very quickly through that process. But I don't believe that we should be giving up on it. We should be accelerating it. We should be making sure that we can identify those things that will give us the greatest acceleration of our business activity and jobs as we come out of the virus, and focusing on it and getting it done.
Well, perhaps reform of the Federation is very central to getting a wider reform agenda.
I'll leave that one for the experts. All I can say from a business perspective is we'd like to see more consistency and less duplication between the jurisdictions.
An easier question. Do you think the National Cabinet should continue to operate on a semi-regular basis to promote the reform process?
I think the National Cabinet has been very successful, and the results speak for themselves. It's been a tremendous outcome for all Australians. And I compliment and congratulate the National Cabinet on the work that it's done. I believe that there's a great opportunity to keep it in place to help us accelerate the economy and to put through all of the changes that we need to make sure the economy comes back as quickly as possible.
And how long will your commission be operating?
The PM initially asked me to do this for 6 months, and there's been no update on that. So we're doing this on a day-by-day basis, just making sure that we're doing the best that we can every day to try and help Australians to protect lives and livelihoods. So we'll do this as long as we're needed.
So maybe longer than the 6 months?
I think we're on well and truly on track. I do believe that all Australians have done a fantastic job in containing the virus, and now let's do just as equally fantastic job in getting our economy back and running.
Nev Power, thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all from this podcast for The Conversation. Thank you to my producer, Tom Glassie. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.